Welcome. You are listening to Aftersight. This recording is intended solely for individuals who are blind or have low vision.
Hello, and thank you for joining us for the Colorado Business Digest. Our sources today are ColoradoBiz.com and the Denver Business Journal newsletter. Our first article is titled, Documents Show OpenAI's Long Journey from Nonprofit to $157 Billion Valued Company. One early aim was to build a robot to perform housework. The article is dated October 13, 2024, by Talia Beatty. Back in 2016, a scientific research organization incorporated in Delaware and based in Mountain View, California, applied to be recognized as a tax-exempt charitable organization by the Internal Revenue Service. Called OpenAI, the nonprofit told the IRS its goal was to advance digital intelligence in the way that is most likely to benefit humanity as a whole, unconstrained by a need to generate financial return. Its assets included a $10 million loan from one of its four founding directors and now CEO, Sam Altman. The application, which nonprofits are required to disclose and which OpenAI provided to the Associated Press, offers a view back in time to the origins of the artificial intelligence giant that has since grown to include a for-profit subsidiary recently valued at $157 billion by investors. It's one measure of the vast distance OpenAI and the technology that it researches and develops has traveled in under a decade. In the application, OpenAI indicated it did not plan to enter into any joint ventures or for-profit organizations, which it has since done. It also said it did not plan to play any role in developing commercial products or equipment and promised to make its research freely available to the public. A spokesperson for OpenAI, Liz Bourgeois, said in an email that the organization's missions and goals have remained constant, though the way it's carried out its mission has evolved alongside advances in technology. She also said the nonprofit does not carry out any commercial activities. Attorneys who specialize in advising nonprofits have been watching OpenAI's meteoric rise and its changing structure closely. Some wonder if its size and the scale of its current ambitions have reached or exceeded the limits of how nonprofits and for-profits may interact. They also wonder the extent to which its primary activities advance its charitable mission, which it must, and whether some may privately benefit from its work, which is prohibited. In general, nonprofit experts agree that OpenAI has gone to great lengths to arrange its corporate structure to comply with the rules that govern nonprofit organizations. OpenAI's application to the IRS appears typical, said Andrew Steinberg, counsel at Venable LLP and a member of the American Bar Association's Nonprofit Organizations Committee. If the organization's plans and structure changed, it would need to report that information on its annual tax returns, Steinberg said, which it has. At the time that the IRS reviewed the application, there wasn't information that the corporate structure that exists today and the investment structure that they pursued was what they had in mind, he said. And that's okay because they may have developed that later. Here are some highlights from the application. Early research goals. At inception, OpenAI's research plans look quaint in light of the race to develop AI that was in part set off by its release of ChatGPT in 2022. OpenAI told the IRS it planned to train an AI agent to solve a wide variety of games. It aimed to build a robot to perform housework and to develop a technology that could follow complex instructions in natural language. Today, its products, which include text-to-image generators and chatbots that can detect emotion and write code, far exceed those technical thresholds. No commercial ambitions. The nonprofit OpenAI indicated on the application form that it had no plans to enter into joint ventures with for-profit entities. It also wrote, OpenAI does not plan to play any role in developing commercial products or equipment. It intends to make its research freely available to the public on a non-discriminatory basis. OpenAI spokesperson Bourgeois said that the organization believes the best way to accomplish its mission is to develop products that help people use AI to solve problems, including many products it offers for free. But they also believe developing commercial partnerships has helped further their mission, she said. Intellectual property. OpenAI reported to the IRS in 2016 that regularly sharing its research with the general public is central to the mission of OpenAI. OpenAI will regularly release its research results on its website and share software it has developed with the world under the open source software licenses. It also wrote, it intends to retain the ownership of any intellectual property it develops. The value of that intellectual property, and whether it belongs to the nonprofit or for-profit subsidiary, could become important questions if OpenAI decides to alter its corporate structure, as Altman confirmed in September it was considering. The Associated Press and OpenAI have a licensing and technology agreement that allows OpenAI access to part of AP's text archives. Our next article is titled, Marriott Reaches Settlement for Allowing Data Breach. Colorado will receive $822,434. Article titled October 9, 2024. A bipartisan coalition of 50 attorneys general, including Colorado's Phil Weiser, reached a settlement Wednesday with hotel chain Marriott International, Inc., after an investigation into a large multi-year data breach revealed the company failed to comply with consumer protection and personal information protection laws. Under the settlement with the attorneys general, Marriott agrees to strengthen its data security practices, provide consumers with better protections, and make a $52 million payment to the states. Colorado will receive $822,434 from the settlement. The law makes it clear to companies that they have to implement reasonable cybersecurity safeguards, Weiser said. By failing to comply with the law, Marriott harmed those whose data was stolen. With this settlement, we are not only holding the company accountable for their failure to protect consumers and follow the law, we are also requiring them to do a better job moving forward. The years-long breach of the Starwood guest reservation system, during which time intruders went undetected, stretched from July 2014 until September 2018. In 2016, Marriott acquired Starwood and took over its computer system, but did not diagnose and reveal the breach until years later. During the breach, criminals stole 131.5 million guest records pertaining to customers in the United States. The affected records included contact information, gender, dates of birth, legacy Starwood guest information, reservation information, and hotel stay preferences, as well as a limited number of unencrypted passport numbers and unexpired payment card information. Shortly after Marriott announced the breach of the Starwood database, nearly every attorney general in the country launched an investigation. Wednesday's settlement resolves allegations by Weiser and the other attorneys general that Marriott violated state consumer protection laws and personal information protection laws. Under the terms of the settlement, Marriott has agreed to strengthen and continually improve its cybersecurity practices by implementing better training for employees, adopting better data security policies, minimizing the amount of consumer data the company collects and retains, conducting risk assessments according to best practices, including assessing potential risks when acquiring new companies and products, and undergoing regular third-party security assessments for the next 20 years. Additionally, as part of the settlement, Marriott will give consumers a data deletion option and offer multi-factor authentication to consumers for their loyalty rewards accounts, such as Marriott Bonvoy, as well as reviews of those accounts if there is suspicious activity. The settlement money Marriott will pay to the state may be used for any restitution where possible, consumer education or consumer protection enforcement, or efforts to advance the public welfare. Our next article is titled, TikTok was aware of risks kids and teens face on its platform, document alleges. Touted tools aimed at limiting kids' time on the site were largely ineffective. The article is dated October 13, 2024, by Hallelujah Hedero. TikTok was aware that its design features are detrimental to its young users, and that publicly touted tools aimed at limiting kids' time on the site were largely ineffective, according to internal documents and communications exposed in lawsuit filed by the state of Kentucky. The details are among redacted portions of Kentucky's lawsuit that contains the internal communications and documents unearthed during a more than two-year investigation into the company by various states across the country. Kentucky's lawsuit was filed last week, alongside separate complaints brought forth by attorneys general in a dozen states as well as the District of Columbia. TikTok is also facing another lawsuit from the Department of Justice and is itself suing the Justice Department over a federal law that could ban it in the U.S. by mid-January. The redacted information, which was inadvertently revealed by Kentucky's Attorney General's office and first reported to Kentucky Public Radio, touches on a range of topics, most importantly, the extent to which TikTok knew how much time young users were spending on the platform and how sincere it was when rolling out tools aimed at curbing excessive use. Beyond TikTok use among minors, the complaint alleges the short-form video sharing app has prioritized quote-unquote beautiful people on its platform and has noted internally that some of the content moderation networks it has publicized are largely misleading. The unredacted complaint, which was seen by the Associated Press, was sealed by a Kentucky state judge on Wednesday after state officials filed an emergency motion to seal it. When reached for comment, TikTok spokesperson Alex Harek said, "It is highly irresponsible of the Associated Press to publish information that is under a court seal. Unfortunately, this complaint cherry-picks misleading quotes and takes outdated documents out of context to misrepresent our commitment to community safety. We have robust safeguards, which include proactively removing suspected underage users, and we have voluntarily launched safety features such as default screen time limits, family pairing, and privacy by default for minors under 16, Harek said in a prepared statement. We stand by these efforts. TikTok use among young users. The complaint alleges that TikTok has quantified how long it takes for young users to get hooked on the platform and shared the findings internally in presentations aimed at increasing user retention rates. The habit moment, as TikTok calls it, occurs when users have watched 260 videos or more during the first week of having a TikTok account. This can happen in under 35 minutes, since some TikTok videos run as short as 8 seconds, the complaint says. Kentucky's lawsuit also cites a spring 2020 presentation from TikTok that concluded that the platform had already hit a ceiling among young users. At that point, the company's estimates showed at least 95% of smartphone users under 17 use TikTok at least monthly, the complaint notes. TikTok tracks metrics for young users, including how long young users spend watching videos and how many of them use the platform every day. The company uses the information it gleans from these reviews to feed its algorithm, which tailors content to people's interests and drives user engagement, the complaint says. TikTok does its own internal studies to find out how the platform is impacting users. The lawsuit cites one group within the company called TikTank, which noted in an internal report that compulsive usage was rampant on the platform. It also quotes an unnamed executive who said kids watch TikTok because the algorithm is really good. But I think we need to be cognizant of what it might mean for other opportunities. And when I say opportunities, I literally mean sleep and eating and moving around the room and looking at somebody in the eyes, the unnamed executive said, according to the complaint. Time management tools. TikTok has a 60-minute daily screen time limit for minors, a feature it rolled out in March 2023 with the stated aim of helping teens manage their time on the platform. But Kentucky's complaint argues that the time limit, which users can easily bypass or disable, was intended more as a public relations tool than anything else. The lawsuit says TikTok measured the success of the time limit feature not by whether it reduced the time teens spent on the platform, but by three other metrics, the first of which was improving public trust in the TikTok platform via media coverage. Reducing screen time among teens was not included as a success metric, the lawsuit said. In fact, it alleged the company had planned to revisit the design of the feature if the time limit feature had caused teens to reduce their TikTok usage by more than 10%. TikTok ran an experiment and found the time limit prompts shaved off just a minute and a half from the average time teens spent on the app, from 108.5 to 107 minutes per day, according to the complaint. But despite the lack of movement, TikTok did not try to make the feature more effective, Kentucky officials say. They allege the ineffectiveness of the feature was, in many ways, by design. The complaint says a TikTok executive named Zhu Wenjia gave approval of the feature only if its impact on TikTok's core metrics were minimal. TikTok, including its CEO Xiao Zhu, have talked about the app's various time management tools, including videos TikTok sends users to encourage them to get off the platform. But a TikTok executive said in an internal meeting those videos are useful talking points, but are not altogether effective. TikTok has prioritized beautiful people on its platform. In a section that details the negative impacts TikTok facial filters can have on users, Kentucky alleges that TikTok's algorithm has prioritized beautiful people, despite knowing internally that content on the platform could perpetuate a narrow beauty norm. The complaint alleges TikTok changed its algorithm, for an internal report noted the app was showing a high volume of not attractive subjects in the app's main For You feed. By changing the TikTok algorithm to show fewer not attractive subjects in the For You feed, defendants took active steps to promote a narrow beauty norm, even though it could negatively impact their young users, the complaint says. TikTok's leakage rates. The lawsuit also takes aim at TikTok's content moderation practices. It cites internal communication, where the company notes its moderation metrics are largely misleading because we are good at moderating the content we capture, but these metrics do not account for the content that we miss. The complaint notes that TikTok knows it has, but does not disclose, significant leakage rates or content that violates the site's community guidelines but is not removed or moderated. Other social media companies also face similar issues on their platforms. For TikTok, the complaint notes the leakage rates include roughly 36% of content that normalizes pedophilia and 50% of content that glorifies minor sexual assault. The lawsuit also accuses the company of misleading the public about its moderation and allowing some popular creators who were deemed to be high value to post content that violates the site's guidelines. Our next article is titled, Home Listings Climb in Nation's Priciest Markets. Locked up real estate inventory begins to shift as mortgage rates trend lower. Article date October 10, 2024, by Alex Vega. Homebuyers in Seattle, Silicon Valley, and the nation's other priciest markets are seeing more properties hit the market as mortgage rates finally start to trend lower. The number of newly listed homes for sale climbed 4.2% last month, according to data from Realtor.com. September's jump was the biggest annual increase since the peak of the spring home buying season and has helped lift active listings 34% from a year earlier, according to Realtor.com. A dearth of properties for sale is one reason keeping the median U.S. home sale price near record highs. The median U.S. home sale price hit an all-time high in June at $426,900. Last month, the Federal Reserve announced its first interest rate cut in more than 4 years and signaled more cuts to come this year and through 2026. The Fed doesn't set mortgage rates, but its policy pivot cleared a path for mortgage rates to generally go lower. While mortgage rates rose this week, economists still expect them to ease in coming months, and that could lead to more listings. Sellers, especially those who are locked into a low rate, have been waiting for market conditions to change, said Daniel Hale, chief economist at Realtor.com. Now that we're seeing mortgage rates down to their lowest levels in 2 years, there are signs of movement, with more sellers putting homes on the market, even in what's typically a real estate shoulder season. Lower mortgage rates boost home shoppers' purchasing power. They also could make selling a home more palatable for homeowners with mortgages that have a fixed rate below current prevailing rates. The most expensive markets in the country drove much of the increase in newly listed homes last month. That includes metropolitan areas around Seattle, San Jose, and Washington, D.C., Realtor.com found. Even so, homeowners who can afford to hold off on selling are likely waiting for rates to come down a lot further than they already have. Consider, as of the second quarter, about 84% of all outstanding mortgages had a rate below 6%, and 56% had a rate below 4%, according to Realtor.com. Hale expects the average rate on a 30-year home loan to stay around 6% through the end of this year. A year ago, the average rate hit a 23-year high of 7.79%, according to mortgage buyer Freddie Mac. September marked the 11th month in a row with an annual increase in active listings and the highest number of properties on the market since April 2020. The pickup in home listings is good news for the housing market, which has been in a sales slump for more than 2 years, partly due to a shortage of homes for sale. Despite the September surge in new listings, the inventory of homes on the market remains below pre-pandemic levels. Active listings were down 23.2% last month compared to September 2019, and listings were off 11.8%, according to Realtor.com. Our next article is titled, Colorado Brewers Leave the Great American Beer Fest with 41 medals. The 40th annual event draws 1,869 competing breweries, dated October 14, 2024. Colorado brewers showed what they, or rather their beers and ciders, were made of at the Great American Beer Festival as they took home 41 medals from the annual event, held October 10 to 12 at the Colorado Convention Center. In all, 35 Colorado brewers won medals. Founded in 1982, the festival is widely regarded as the premier U.S. beer competition, crowning the finest beverages in more than 100 beer and cider styles. A total of 1,869 breweries and cideries took part in this year's competition, with 8,836 different beers judged. Of those, 273 breweries and cideries earned 326 medals. Judging took place in three phases over 7 days. Along with the private competition, GABF boasts the largest collection of U.S. beer served in a public tasting event. Our next article is titled, Nobel Economics Prize Goes to Three Who Found That Freer Societies Are More Likely to Prosper. Future key will be how societies handle AI and other technologies, one economist says. Article dated October 14, 2024, by Daniel Neiman, Mike Corder, and Paul Wiseman. The Nobel Memorial Prize in Economics was awarded Monday to three economists who have studied why some countries are rich and others poor, and have documented that freer, open societies are more likely to prosper. The work by Darren Acemoglu, Simon Johnson, and James A. Robinson demonstrated the importance of societal institutions for a country's prosperity, the Nobel Committee of the Royal Swedish Academy of Sciences said at the announcement in Stockholm. Acemoglu and Johnson work at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, while Robinson does his research at the University of Chicago. Jacob Svensson, chair of the Committee for the Prize in Economic Sciences, said their analysis has provided a much deeper understanding of the root causes of why countries fail or succeed. Reached by the Academy in Athens, Greece, where he was to speak at a conference, the Turkish-born Acemoglu, 57, said he was astonished by the award. "You never expect something like this," he said. Acemoglu said the research honored by the prize underscores the value of democratic institutions. "I think, broadly speaking, the work that we have done favors democracy," he said in a telephone call with the Nobel Committee and reporters in Stockholm. But he added, "Democracy is not a panacea. Introducing democracy is very hard. When you introduce elections, that sometimes creates conflict." In an interview with the Associated Press, Robinson, 64, said he doubts that China can sustain an economic prosperity as long as it keeps a repressive political system. "There's many examples in world history of societies like that, that do well for 40 or 50 years," Robinson said by phone. "What you see is that it's never sustainable. The Soviet Union did well for 50 or 60 years. Robinson said that many societies have successfully made the transition to what he, Acemoglu, and Johnson call an inclusive society. "Look at the United States," Robinson said. "This was a country of slavery, of privilege, where women were not allowed to take part in the economy or vote. Every country that is currently relatively inclusive and open made that transition," he added. "In the modern world, you've seen that in South Korea, in Taiwan, and Mauritius." Acemoglu and Robinson wrote the 2012 bestseller, Why Nations Fail: The Origins of Power, Prosperity, and Poverty, which argued that man-made problems were responsible for keeping countries poor. In their work, the winners looked, for instance, at the city of Nogales, which straddles the U.S.-Mexico border. Despite sharing the same geography, climate, and a common culture, life is very different on either side of the border. In Nogales, Arizona, to the north, residents are relatively well off and live long lives. Most children graduate from high school. To the south, in Mexico's Nogales, Sonora, residents are much poorer and organized crime and corruption abound. The difference, the economists found, is a U.S. system that protects property rights and gives citizens a say in their government. Acemoglu expressed worry Monday that the democratic institutions in the United States and Europe were losing support from the population. "Support for democracy is at an all-time low, especially in the U.S., but also in Greece and in the U.K. and France," Acemoglu said on the sidelines of the conference in an Athens suburb. "And I think that is a symbol of how people are disappointed with democracy," he said. "They think democracy hasn't delivered what it promised." Robinson agreed. "Clearly, you had an attack on inclusive institutions in this country," he said. "You had a presidential candidate who denied that he lost the last election. So President Trump rejected the democratic rule of the citizens. Of course, I'm worried. I'm a concerned citizen." Johnson told the AP that economic pressures were alienating many Americans. "A lot of people who were previously in the middle class were hit very hard by the combination of globalization, automation, the decline of trade unions, and a sort of shift more broadly in corporate philosophy," Johnson said. "So instead of workers being a resource to be developed, which they were in the 19th and 20th early century, they become a cost to be minimized. Now, that squeezed the middle class. We have, as a country, failed to deliver in recent decades on what we're previously very good at, which was sharing prosperity. One key for the future," Johnson said, "is how societies manage new technologies, such as artificial intelligence." AI could go either way," he said. "AI could either empower people with a lot of education, make them more highly skilled, enable them to do more tasks and get more pay. Or it could be another massive wave of automation that pushes the remnants of the middle down to the bottom. And then, yes, you're not going to like the political outcomes." In their work, the economists studied institutions that European powers such as Britain and Spain put in place when they colonized much of the world starting in the 1600s. They brought different policies to different places, giving later researchers a natural experiment to analyze. Colonies that were sparsely populated offered less resistance to foreign rule and therefore attracted more settlers. In those places, colonial governments tended to establish more inclusive economic institutions that incentivized settlers to work hard and invest in their new homeland. In turn, this led to demands for political rights that gave them a share of the profits, the Nobel Committee said. In more densely populated places that attracted fewer settlers, the colonial regimes limited political rights and set up institutions that focused on benefiting a local elite at the expense of the wider population, it said. Paradoxically, this means that the parts of the colonized world that were relatively the most prosperous around 500 years ago are now those that are relatively poor, it added, noting that India's industrial production exceeded the American colonies in the 18th century. The economic prize is formally known as the Bank of Sweden Prize in Economic Sciences in memory of Alfred Nobel. The central bank established it in 1968 as a memorial to Nobel, the 19th century Swedish businessman and chemist who invented dynamite and established the five Nobel Prizes. Though Nobel purists stress that the economics prize is technically not a Nobel Prize, it is always presented together with the others on December 10, the anniversary of Nobel's death in 1896. Nobel honors were announced last week in medicine, physics, chemistry, literature, and peace. Our next article is titled, Colorado Nonprofits Raise $3.7 Million for Youth Sports. Youth Sports Giving Day ensures thousands will enjoy youth sports. Dated October 14, 2024. An inaugural campaign to raise money for youth sports hauled in $3.7 million in a single month for different groups, according to organizers. Called the Colorado Youth Sports Giving Day, the campaign attracted roughly $2.1 million through about 3,700 donations in September to various nonprofits engaged in youth sports, the Daniels Fund and Project Play Colorado said in a news release. Another $1.6 million came through matching funds from Alpine Bank, Colorado Health Foundation, Denver Broncos Foundation, El Pomar Foundation, Rose Community Foundation, Strom Link Family Foundation, the Weld Trust, Daniels Fund, and others. We are truly overwhelmed by the incredible generosity Colorados have shown during the Youth Sports Giving Day campaign. The outpouring of support for local sports organization shows just how deeply our community values youth sports and believes in the importance of making them accessible to every young person, said Hannah Scandera, president and CEO of the Daniels Fund. The organizers noted research tying youth sports to academic outcomes, mental and physical health, and leadership abilities, adding that active young people are also likely to earn higher incomes later. The organizers noted that financial barriers often preclude children from accessing sports programs. Notably, the organizers said the average cost to participate in organized sports stood at $883 per year based on 2022 numbers, and young people often drop out of sports by age 11. The funds we raise will help over 1,000 children participate in YMCA youth sports who may not have been able to otherwise. We're grateful for the opportunity to join this powerful campaign alongside so many organizations across the state. And we're overwhelmed by the generosity of our Denver Y community, said Breezy Bolden, the president and CEO of YMCA of Metro Denver. Megan Scremmen, president and CEO of Special Olympics of Colorado, added that the funds raised during the campaign will affect more than 400,000 students. Support from this campaign, along with the matching funds, will help provide the resources necessary to expand the program to more Colorado schools, ultimately giving more athletes with and without intellectual disabilities the chance to build confidence, form friendships, and foster greater inclusivity for all, Scremmen said. Our next article is titled, Colorado Owes Taxpayers $1.7 Billion in Tabor Refunds. Dated October 14, 2024, by Luigi Del Puerto. The Colorado state government owes taxpayers a total of $1.7 billion in refunds mandated under the Taxpayers' Bill of Rights. The state collected roughly $1.4 billion more in revenue during the 2024 fiscal year than allowed under Tabor, according to a state audit. The state already has roughly $290 million in outstanding Tabor refund liability at the beginning of the fiscal year, bringing the total refund amount to about $1.66 billion. Passed by voters in 1992, Tabor limits the annual growth in revenue to the inflation rate plus population change. Any amount raised above the limit must be returned to taxpayers. Colorado has three refund mechanisms: a property tax exemption reimbursement through the local government, a temporary reduction in the income tax rate, and a six-tier sales tax refund that distributes money based on people's adjusted gross income. The excess state revenues are expected to trigger all three of the refund mechanisms, Maya Rosachikova, the state audit manager, said in a news release. Once the state has begun processing refunds next year, people can check the status by going to Colorado Department of Revenue's website. Our next article is titled, Colorado Casinos Record Highest Monthly Revenue of 2024 in July, though yearly figures show a small decline, dated October 2, 2024. With the gambling industry growing steadily year on year, revenues have been up across most states and denominations within the sector. However, for Colorado, despite casinos in the state reporting their highest revenues for the year in July 2024, the number was actually down from the same period in 2023, totaling $96.4 million, down from $98.1 million in 2023. Revenue was still more than healthy. Compared to other states like Pennsylvania and New Jersey that offer legalized online gambling, physical casinos in Colorado haven't been able to match the large gains that iGaming states keep seeing. And the allure of online gambling is obvious. By effectively providing a casino in your pocket, players can use it to play classic casino games like poker, roulette, or blackjack online from the comfort of their own homes. What's more, many of these iGames come with innovative features that attract more players to this form of online entertainment. It's also been found that games like blackjack continue to be one of the biggest draws at casinos, accounting for almost 32% of all actions taken at casinos. At the same time, slots have become massively successful at online casinos, making up over 87% of all games carried by most operators. These numbers underscore why online casinos have been contributing such astronomical tax revenue for states that support them. As an added consequence, states that don't offer legal iGaming continue to see players accessing offshore sites, as these platforms fall within a legal gray area. Since offshore sites aren't subject to state laws, players are relatively free to play at them. As a result, novelty platforms like instant play casinos offer a wealth of benefits that provide far fewer restrictions to traditional regulated online casinos. The overall decline in year-on-year revenue from Colorado's casino revenue for July included slightly weaker performances in both slots and table games. Slots took in the bulk of the revenue in that period, accounting for $82.8 million of the revenue on their own. However, during the same period last year, slots generated $84.2 million in revenue. With the focus being on slots, table games also saw a slight dip, generating $13.6 million in July. This was down by more than $320,000 from last year. However, amid all of this, blackjack was a bright light, with the classic game showing an increase in the number and value of bets placed and revenue generated from it. Regardless of the losses, these weren't endemic to every region in the state, as places like Cripple Creek distinguished itself as one of the few areas that featured positive growth. Market share didn't seem to play a factor either, since Black Hawk, which boasted a 75% market share, saw its revenue decline by close to 4%. Despite July getting off to a strong start, it ultimately never sustained that momentum. If the state hoped to stem this trend come August, the new month was worse in some ways since it fell short of the 2022 figures for the same period. Time will tell how the Colorado casino industry will fare come the end of September, though overall, the market there is very robust. The legalization of sports betting in 2020 provided a seismic shift, though adding online casinos would definitely grow the over market substantially more. What is evident is that states that only rely on physical casinos are likely to keep seeing trends like this as more and more people turn to online gambling. For now, iGaming sites can't quite replicate the atmosphere and thrill of playing in a physical casino. The solid start in July aside, the slight year-over-year decline sets Colorado casinos back $1.7 million for the start of fiscal year 2025. However, the local industry is still quite hopeful that the trend can be reversed soon. In all likelihood, it will, since we're already in September, meaning it will soon be the festive season, and more people will have time away from work to go gambling if they want. Our next article is titled, Seven Best Research Paper Writing Services According to Student Reviews in 2024. Article dated October 16, 2024. Research papers play a crucial role in a college student's academic work. They can significantly influence your overall grade, either positively or negatively. Regardless of the topic, it's essential to possess thoroughly researched material, a coherent structure, and writing that is free of errors. You can certainly accomplish all of this on your own. However, students frequently lack sufficient time to focus on their tasks. It's quite common for assignments to lack inspiration. You may lack sufficient interest in the topic to finish your assignment. Insufficient resources is another frequent problem. If you're finding it difficult to write your research paper due to any of these factors, think about seeking reliable research paper help. There are many professional paper writing services available, potentially hundreds, that are eager to assist you with various types of coursework. The market offers a variety of choices. However, selecting a trustworthy writing assistant can be a daunting task. You require a service that has experienced research paper writers, a supportive attitude toward students, and reliable quality assurances. If this is what you've been looking for, you've come to the right place. We're here to assist you in discovering dependable and trustworthy services for writing research papers. To determine and evaluate the best options, we have examined discussions on Reddit, which has millions of users, the majority of whom are students. It's difficult to envision a superior location for obtaining suggestions on writing support for schools. We have examined numerous discussions containing posts and comments in which students express their thoughts and experiences. After discovering the most favorite services among Reddit users, we personally tried them to provide you with our genuine feedback. Here you will find a compilation of the seven top-rated research paper writing services in the USA. Essay Service. Essay Service offers everything you need: exceptional writing quality, quick delivery, and excellent college paper writing service reviews from students. It is among the top research paper writing services in the USA, offering expert academic support. Here are some features that we appreciated most. The website encompasses a wide range of subject topics. You can get help with almost anything. The key point is that Essay Service boasts a varied group of talented individuals. The authors have diverse educational backgrounds. When seeking assistance, you can select a specialist with a degree in your specific field. When you review the profiles of the writers, you'll notice that they all hold college degrees. We observed that a few writers had bachelor degrees, while the majority possess master's degrees or a PhD. However, the services continue to be quite affordable. One page costs $12.54. Ultimately, the amount you will need to pay per page depends on the word count and the deadline. The greater the number of pages you require, the lower cost per page. Essay Hub. The next gem on our list is Essay Hub. Reddit users appreciated it for its fast response time. It can be utilized for homework with strict deadlines and time constraints. The shortest turnaround time is just 6 hours. You may also talk about your deadline specifics with both the support team and your writer. Timeliness is a crucial assurance of the service. The research paper writing site by Essay Hub features various types of services. It can be utilized for help with writing, revising, and editing tasks. What kinds of papers are included? It's hard to identify any that are excluded. There are many different types of options available, including research papers, various essays, presentations, reports, reviews, creative writing, dissertations, and term papers, among others. The writing team at Essay Hub is particularly noteworthy. All writers are native English speakers with a minimum of several years of experience. Do My Essay. Are you looking for high-quality results? Then Do My Essay is the right choice for you. We requested a research paper from its authors, and the result was impeccable. Every aspect, including the selection of evidence, formatting, and citations, warrants an A. Users on Reddit generally share this view. Do My Essay was frequently highlighted as a research paper writing service that is deserving of your attention. Having reviewed numerous positive feedback from students and personally testing the service, we can confidently state that it is consistently high quality. Do My Essay provides a seamless user experience. The ordering procedure consists of just 3 simple steps. After that, you can rest and return solely to collect your completed paper. The integrated calculator allows you to check the cost of the paper. Our next article is titled, Experts Coached Couple Through a Senior Move to a Perfect Landing. Dated October 11, 2024. Jim and Marilyn Anderson had actually begun preparing themselves for a move from their home of 37 years in Centennial when an emergency sped up the timeline faster than either could have possibly imagined. Last winter, the day after Christmas, Jim Anderson slipped on the ice outside their place in the Knowles neighborhood and broke a hip. Suddenly, the 2-story house that had been their home for a lifetime became a hostile environment. "We couldn't do a stairlift in it," recalls Marilyn. "Emergencies are a worst-case scenario for seniors who are approaching an eventual move," says realtor Blair Bryant with the Stellar Group, real estate agents with the Senior Solutions Division, devoted entirely to senior moves. "When you have to do a move in a hurry, you lose control over where you're going to end up, as well as the time you need to ready your house for market," Bryant adds. But the Andersons made a happy landing, thanks to Stellar's team, who coached them on decluttering the home for sale and used an in-house contractor for some low-budget fix-ups to ready it for showings. Stellar's sale drew a contract in a single day with multiple offers. All of that looked highly unlikely after the accident happened. The Andersons had previously attended 2 of the 3 seminars that Stellar offers for free about senior moves. Seminars on various aspects downsizing are set for locations in Southeast Aurora, Centennial, and Denver in October and November. Marilyn, she had a 30-year career teaching high school history in Littleton and at the University of Denver High School, had discussed senior downsizing with her neighbors and knew that the big problem would be finding a single-level, low-maintenance place to move. But although the couple had talked about timing, Jim Anderson, he wrote the long-running Oil Roundup column in the Denver Post, hadn't felt ready to go yet. "It ended in a crisis," recalled Marilyn. In January, as options to stay in place were running out, she placed a call to Bryant at Stellar. "The first thing we tackled was locating a place to go with no waiting list," recalls Bryant. "Those are never easy to find," he adds. The Andersons were set on getting a patio home with a yard and outdoor living space, not an apartment. "No corridor living," Marilyn said. After some looking, Stellar's agents turned up a perfect landing spot, a rental campus in South Denver, run by a nonprofit with some homes available. Eastern Star Masonic Retirement Campus, off South Quebec Street, north of East Yale, had a long waiting list coming into the 2020 pandemic, but now had a 2,200-foot plan with a patio opening onto the Highline Canal for a quick move in. With help from Stellar's move contractor, the Andersons settled in, each getting an office in a daylit garden-level basement. Neighbors have been quick to say hello, and Marilyn has been attending campus seminars. It's a social place with very interesting people, she says. Meanwhile, Stellar agents prepped the Centennial House to sell. They were painting the day after we moved out, Marilyn recalls. Stellar's Bryant says that even without a crisis, planning ahead for a move gives much more freedom of choice when the time arrives. If you're on a faster time frame, this fall market is looking good, he adds. The Fed's most recent cut of interest rates has had a positive effect on the real estate market. With Jim on the mend, Marilyn says Stellar's seminars are revitalizing. When I went to our first, it was a load off me. Our next article is titled, Proposed 500,000 square foot warehouse in Jefferson County draws scrutiny and support. Dated September 23, 2024, by Deborah Grigsby. Lynn Clemens enjoys the blue sky and scenic views from her quiet Arvada home near Hyatt Lake. But, she said, she may soon find herself staring at the backside of a warehouse and inhaling exhaust from idling trucks at the facility's 144 planned loading bays. That's how Clemens, who is the president of Westwood Villas HOA, is framing the fight over a proposed 500,000-square-foot warehouse complex that Jefferson County officials are considering. While the development would not literally build a warehouse in her backyard, Clemens said it would mean a concrete wall within approximately 200 feet of her home. The developer, meanwhile, described it as a well-thought-out plan that will integrate well with the community, complete with noise and light protections for neighbors. The developer also insisted that, contrary to fears, it will not be a non-stop heavy trucking center. Supporters also said the project would bring in jobs to the area, something that the county needs. As envisioned, the Golden Technology Center involves the construction of three large warehouse buildings and moving a portion of a neighborhood canal to accommodate the project. The applicant, Constellation Real Estate Partners, defined the project in an October 10, 2023 community meeting as a master-planned business park that would house multiple tenants in the high-tech manufacturing business, as well as HVAC, marble and hot tub and pool companies. This is not going to be a high-volume trucking center, said Scott Alexander, a CREP partner, during a public outreach last year. The developer's website states specifically that the Golden Technology Center project is not a heavy trucking distribution or logistics center that will run nonstop. The project's vision, the company said, is to integrate into the surrounding community with thoughtful placemaking, complete with enhanced noise, sound, and light protections. The site also touts the project's strategic placement along the McIntyre Corridor, saying it will play a vital role in recruiting companies and creating new jobs. McIntyre Neighbors United, a collective of 18 homeowner associations in the North Plains area of Jefferson County, has urged the county to delay approval of the proposed project near Hyatt Lake, east of the intersection of McIntyre Street and West 60th Avenue, until a more in-depth analysis of its potential impact is conducted. According to the group, the key issue is the project's incompatibility with the current Jefferson County master plan. The group also raised worries about potential traffic, noise, and environmental hazards, and pointed to multiple truck bays in submitted schematics. This warehouse project could not be built in Arvada, said Ann LaFoon, a member of McIntyre Neighbors United. This could not be built in Broomfield. This could not be built in Lyons, and it could not be built in Golden. LaFoon said her group has asked the county multiple times to place a moratorium on constructing logistic distribution centers within 3,000 feet of homes until more studies and the current zoning code can be reviewed. Thank you for joining the Colorado Business Digest, read by Michael Hesser.
If you enjoyed this program, please register for our free services at www.aftersight.org or by calling 303-786-7777.